This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free
radio.
Okay, bonjour, on me, everybody. Thank you for coming. Can you all hear me? Bonjour, on me. Thank you for coming today to honor Cindy Gladue and to protest this awful violation of her body that has happened. I'm just asking not to film for a few moments as our elder is about to open for us. And I'm going to ask Chanel to introduce her.
So we'd like to give thanks for Dorothy Peters, our elder, for doing our opening today. And just a reminder to folks to please not film while this is happening. Thank you. Just while the opening is happening, no filming.
So I was given tobacco this morning to come and do the opening for the Justice for Injuries to film in and do more silence. So I'm going to do it in the language and then I will try and translate a little bit. So I'm going to start right now. Oh, bonjour, to Milito. Oh, bonjour, to. Nishonsug, Obojo, no commissug, Megwich Kinagogi, Nishin, Gorich, Kituang, Chimatsiang, Megwich Kinagogi, Nishin, Gorich, Pussel, Nikuna, Nima, Nungum Gavi, Shivak, Gorish, Gorich, Matisotika, Nishnabe, Nita Shigave, and Jimong and Mago, Nioke and Shnabe, Quig, Garnish, Yikanuno, Chibigayo. Was I make a wee buggy my chog? Need the shigay on your man, Jimmy Bayang. Gun giggle, got your six noon going, got up my door at me, can I? Need the shee. Angie named the monk, a mark in a gunny bayang. Gunning got your six noon, chill to my chog, weaver, milk again, snob acre. Meet the shee and butcher, garnish, no commiss yog, o my mind yon, deal 3 minutes ago, deal dance yog. Nita shee ka ine ni maat mi ugi ge. Ogi. Ogi pagit naa no sa muiba. Nita shee anji maane ni maat ige. Mi ugi ge ni shnabe. Kaan ka ishi seis. Kaan tag ishi seis sinun. Muiba chi maa chaat. Nita shee. Dibak se ni migo. Uma chi bibi indi ge. Chi bibi moot shiang. Hoorni ge chi gane ni miang. Hoorni ge chi bi singa man. Hoorni ge chi gane ni miang. Or negate you in the monk, I'm a shiggy shiny, we can not measure. Meal the gay. And snobby can end it, you. Or negate not your mat to what we can have. Or negate you on civil gate your mat is yacht. Meet the shea on jitter. Nungum gaggy shivak. Muggy book saying me go cheech and unk. Garnish garning dush dug it much as sealed milk again snobby quig. Meet the shea. Aren't you gaggy the twang nungum? Garnish. Give up seeing me go. Cheech in on. Aha, me have to go, yeah. Measure, I should get on schnabe, give me nog. Can I get up marky? Or in a chip mat is yacht. Garning get on a shoggy, you should get sealed meal the gear. And I am a gunner, or a good to go on schnabe. Can I still go marky, go get a turkey? I should get in and end on a chip mat door and go on a get your mat sound. Meet the shee, aha, megwich, 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 megwich. Just ask the Creator to come into our circle, and that a long time ago that our Anishinaabe communities and all the Anishinaabe people used to look after each other and one another. And we just asked him to come into the circle to remember our sisters who were taken away from us far too early. They were grandmothers, they were mothers, they were sisters, they were daughters, and they had children of their own, and they had brothers, they were friends, they were partners, and they were a big part of our community. And we ask the Creator to come here and all our helpers so that they can find our voice, so that we can speak for them, and that their lives, they had a journey, and that we have a journey. And part of that is to give us a voice for those women, that they need to be heard, and that we want the Creator to come and listen and take care of their families and all those that they left behind. And just thank Jamaiguich for everything that we have on earth, that we don't ask for anything and that we don't do anything for nothing. That everything that we do as a community, we do because that's what we do, to take care of one another. Aho Miigwech.
Thank you so much, Jamaiguich, Dorothy.
So next, Audrey Huntley of No More Silence is going to be speaking. She's going to be sharing the statement from the Goodhue family. And she's asked that drummers who are here, who are present, come join her.
So before I read the statement, I just want to just express how much respect I have for Cindy's mother, and just express how horribly difficult this must have been for her, for Cindy's daughters. This is, you know, unspeakable, and they should be as shielded from media and public attention as much as possible. This is why this statement is being read by myself, and the family is, you know, deserves the privacy and the healing and the support that they need. And I just also want to remind everybody that all the families of missing and murdered women are really hurting right now. This has been really, really triggering for all of them, and they all need our love and support right now. So that being said, I'm going to read what Cindy has written, what Donna has written. So Donna really wanted people to know more about Cindy, so that's why she wrote the statement. On behalf of the family, thank you all for your support in seeking justice for Cindy. It means a lot to us to see how many people across Canada have shown they care. We are very grateful that you're asking for justice. Thank you. My daughter Cindy Ivy Gladue was born July 23rd, 1974 in Athabasca, Alberta. Cindy was my only child for 5 years until my son Kevin was born. Cindy got jealous because she now had a brother. She wasn't the baby anymore. She had two more siblings, a brother Jeff and a sister Marilyn. Cindy was raised in Colling Lake for 9 years until I left Colling Lake and moved to Edmonton, where Cindy, Kevin, Jeff, and Marilyn were raised by my husband, Lawrence McLeod. Living in Edmonton and close to my parents made Cindy happy because she was close to her grandma, who called her Sandy. Losing her grandma at 16 years old broke her heart because she was grandma's girl. Cindy made a lot of friends going to school. Cindy was close to her uncles and aunties. Cindy loved going on Facebook, chatting with her friends, listening to music, and watching her cooking shows. Cindy loved to cook and was a good cook too. When Cindy spent a night with the kids, she always cooked breakfast for me in the morning, even though I was not hungry. "Mom, you have to eat," that's what she always told me. I told her to come to bingo, but she didn't like it. Cindy said, "Mom, how can you sit here for 3 or 4 hours? "Sorry, Mom, but I don't like it." Cindy was a kind-hearted person who would help you if she could, anyway. At the age of 21, Cindy had a little baby girl. Her name is Brianne. She was born June 23rd, 1996. And Cindy had two more girls, Brandy and Cheyenne. Cindy loved her girls so much. Later on in 2000, Cindy could not look after her girls because she was a single mom and had a hard time raising them alone, so I stepped in to help her. I raised the girls myself. Cindy was thankful for what I did. That's what moms are for, to help your children. But no matter what Cindy did, her kids always came first. Cindy's life changed when she started to hang around with the wrong crowd, but what can you do? She was an adult. Cindy was very close to her brothers and sister. She would help her siblings if they needed help in some way. Cindy was happy when her sister had her own children, so now she was an auntie. Cindy had her ups and downs, but nothing seemed to bother her. She always said, "Life goes on. What can you do anyways?" Losing my daughter, Cindy, was the hardest thing I had to go through. Telling her brothers and sister was hard. Cindy's girls made it harder because that was their mom. Going to trial was very hard for me. Then when they found him not guilty, that was a shock. I wish I had more to say, but this is hard for me.
The drummers are going to be doing the Strong Woman song. to honor Cindy. So this is in honor of Cindy Gladue. By the Alberta government that they will be appealing the decision. Next, I'd like to introduce Krista Bigkanu. Some of you may know Krista for her incredible advocacy work for Indigenous people and the legal system. Krista is the legal director for the Aboriginal Legal Services, and she's going to be speaking with us about some of the legal issues around this case.
Anine Winnebujo, Kristen Vishnakaz, Nigig Dodum, Anishinaabe Kwe, Wasiegamak Donjaba, Ogima Kwe, Gamut Akanun Majig, Gakina Wabama Debwi Win, Miigwech Jemnado, Noksamisik, Shosamisik, Anishinaabe, Mississaugas, the New Credit, the Haudenosaunee, Huron Wendat, and Algonquins, all traditional people of this land. Thank you all for coming. Wow. It's an immense amount of feeling that a lot of us have had since the verdict came out, and to hear the announcement just moments ago that the Alberta government will indeed be appealing it, on one level brings me a little bit of gladness, but it also causes pause for concern in other ways, because we keep relying on the criminal justice system to try to take care of this sociological phenomenon of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And as long as we're only looking at the criminal justice system in Canada, we have so many problems. And, you know, Cindy, as a sex worker, particularly in the current legislative climate, the Bill C-36 that got passed in, that will criminalize actions of sex workers or people purchasing sex work, is going to continue to harm sex workers. It's a reality. Just yesterday, very quietly, the premier in this province announced that the Minister of the Attorney General had given advice that there was no constitutional invalidity, therefore they're going to uphold that law. Shame! And I got to start with, you know, I've got notes here, but as usual, I go off script. I got to start with, when I first read the story, I think I was so shocked I blocked out the fact that a human vagina of someone who was killed was actually in evidence. The first time I read it, I didn't see those words, preserved vagina. The first time I read it, I just, in my mind, went straight to like an anatomically correct model that you'd find in any doctor's office. And it was when I was with a colleague and reading it again, because I was writing a letter to the prosecutors saying you have to appeal, and I read out the paragraph, and when I said the words out loud, I was kicked in my stomach. My eyes began to water. My colleague had the sense to close my door and let me have my moment. And I cried, and I was angry and sad for 2 days. And turning to my normal, you know, Aboriginal, my Anishinaabe beliefs and spirit of learning to let go of things because I can't hold everything, I couldn't do that for 2 full days. And so, you know, I put a lot of thought into a bunch of the legal issues because there's got to be a way that things can be done better. And now I'll turn to my notes. So, if you set aside the shock of the verdict in Cindy Gladue's murder trial, you're still left with the horrific fact that a court in Canada allowed the most intimate part of a woman's body to be exhibited in a jury trial. A Cree woman's intimate body part was used as evidence at trial. Further, it's still technically held as evidence. And it will need to be throughout the appeal. In the modern age of technology, we can take any image, any inanimate object, and make it have a 3D simulation. There was no need for this evidence to be before the court. You can argue that it may be that technology costs too much. There is no value on human dignity. You cannot put a Given that you cannot place value on human dignity, any arguments that the cost of technology is too high doesn't suffice. The legal test for admissibility was used in weighing whether or not Cindy's vagina should be real evidence before the court and jury. I was still surprised, despite it being admissible, despite it being relevant, that there was not a reason to exclude this. In law, one of those reasons is based on the integrity of the proceeding. I believe 4 issues appear to have been overlooked when considering whether it was necessary to exclude Cindy's vagina as evidence to maintain the integrity of the process. And that included her dignity as a human being in life, and the dignity that was should have been afforded to her family in respect of the loss of her life. The second thing is access to justice. Access to justice, particularly for Aboriginal people, has to include seeing justice being done. It has to include a family being able to sit in a courtroom and the courtroom not being hostile to them and their interests. The moment the vagina was allowed into evidence, that became a hostile place for the family to witness justice. The third was that the unorthodox approach to evidence was gratuitous. It was unnecessary. It was completely unnecessary. It was completely unnecessary, not just because of the technology, but because them as expert witnesses, they should have been able to describe to the court. Of course there'd be a difference in opinion between 2 experts. Their job is to convince the trier of fact, in this case the jury, which theory was correct. It did not require using Cindy's vagina to demonstrate how the injury occurred. And the final point was the potential for vicarious trauma experienced by those in the courtroom, not just the family, and the public in general, but of course, foremost, the family. The vicarious trauma or the triggering, and so Audrey had mentioned earlier that this has actually not just triggered this family, this has triggered many families who are experiencing a loss of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Cindy was a human being. She was a human being regardless of her profession. She was a human being. It's really that simple. Her remains belonged to a human being, and they had no place as evidence in the Canadian justice system. She was a mother, she was a daughter. Using only her dissected pelvic region and vagina as evidence removes those significant characterizations of who Cindy was as a person and a human being. Under the guise of medical evidence, intimate body parts cannot be publicly displayed in this manner. Privacy interests do not end at death. There's nothing more private than the intimate body parts of a woman. In some Indigenous cultures, those body parts, whether a woman chooses to or not, are life-creating and sacred. And to display them in a courtroom to demonstrate a medical theory is unacceptable. At the beginning, I had said that her vagina, the tissue, remains in evidence. It's held separate from the body. This means her body is not whole in its resting place. In any other context, this could be seen as desecration of her remains. In the Canadian judicial process, we're calling it preservation in a couple weeks since I heard the verdict, to see this many faces and this much love come to care and support the family. And it also requires us to keep talking about what we believe is acceptable and not acceptable. It's supposed to be our justice system as well. It's supposed to be informed by what we need it to occur. And there has to be a recognition of what this community wants when it's our community that's suffering the most losses. Just on a last note, I know how difficult it was for the organizers to read in the family's statement, and I can only imagine how difficult it was for the family to express that statement. So, you know, one of the slogans that has kind of been driving this, and I would make my heart a little warmer is if we could do it at least a couple times again, is this concept of no justice, no peace. So, no justice.
No peace.
No justice.
No peace.
No justice.
No peace.
Chimiwetch. Thank you, everyone. I'm going to introduce our next speaker. We have two more speakers, and then we will be finishing with a jingle dancer. Next up is Lena Peters. And Lena is an outspoken activist, organizer, and artist from Toronto. She's a founding member of Black Lives Matter Toronto, a coalition of black activists organizing in solidarity with those in Ferguson and around the world. You also may recognize her from one half of the online sex education duo, Condoms and Candy, which she does with her mother. Please welcome Lena.
Hi, guys. Okay, so no justice, no peace, right? One more time, because I need it. No justice?
No peace!
No justice?
No peace!
I think for those of us who are accustomed to living with no justice, we're in a constant state of no peace. We talk about it like it's a state issue. We talk about it when things go wrong. But when there's systemic issues like the one at hand, when there's systemic issues that affect missing and murdered Indigenous women, when those of us who are constantly facing violence from the state are moving through our lives, we move through our lives with no peace. It's no wonder that Indigenous women bear the brunt of the violence that this country has to offer, because this country was built on violence. This country was built on a colonial taking. This country is here, we stand here. Our normal is the idea that land can be taken violently, that things can be had by just taking them. That's capitalism, that's the system that is so normalized every single day. And so inside of that system, of course, the rape culture is born. And the people who have to suffer through that the most are the people who are associated with this land, the people who have defended this land for so long. And those people are Indigenous people. Those people are Indigenous women. And that's why I'm here today, especially as a black person, but as a settler, to acknowledge that Indigenous women have protected this land for so long. They have stood for us for so long. It is so important that we recognize that we have to come and take care and support the people who have fought for us to continue living on this land. When I see things like, excuse me, like the fracking situations in the East, it's indigenous people who stand up for the health and safety and environmental livelihood of every single one of us who are here. So it has to be the responsibility of every single settler to then defend indigenous people and especially indigenous women. It's Cornel West who says, justice is what love looks like in public, right?
Yes.
And what I keep thinking about is, excuse me, how violence is really people who don't get the right, what happens when folks don't get the right to be loved in public. And so that's why it's so, so important that we show up, and it's so important that we're here today, because we are saying that we love missing and murdered Indigenous women, that Indigenous women and Indigenous lives are valued. We're saying that justice is what it looks like when we show up to love people that aren't being shown to us as lovable. Sex workers are lovable. Indigenous women are lovable. Trans women are lovable. People of color are lovable. Those of us who feel the pain of no justice and no peace are inherently lovable. And it is so, so, so important that when we come together, we show what it looks like when we love each other, when we seek justice and we seek peace together. That's what love looks like, you guys. So please, when we're angry and when we meet in rage and when we meet in solidarity, continue to hold love for those of us who aren't here right now, for those of us who can't be here, for those of us who don't know how to be here. Thank you for showing up to love when you got here. That's your one.
Hi everyone, thank you to Lena. I'm gonna speak for a few minutes. My name is Chanel Gallant. I am an organizer of people in the sex trade, whether they are there by choice, coercion, or circumstance. First, I just wanna start by taking a moment to express my sadness and grief to the Gladue family who lost their beloved mother, daughter, and sister. I can just say that Cindy and every Indigenous woman, including those in the sex trade, deserved so much better than this. The Gladue family deserved better than to be re-victimized by the legal system who dehumanized Cindy's body and let her killer walk. I support the call for an appeal, and I'm glad to hear that the Alberta government will be engaging in an appeal of the decision, because it has clearly outraged so many people nationally. But I also know that for Indigenous women, especially those in the sex industry, as Krista Bikinu was saying, the court system will never provide justice. So I'm here to ask for more than an appeal. I am asking for structural change that will mean no more women treated like Cindy ever again. And it will take a lot, because we know there are so many factors that have led to the disappearances and murders of over 1,200 Indigenous women in so-called Canada. It is an epidemic of violence that's so staggering that, like many, I struggle to even understand it, let alone figure out how I could personally respond as a settler. So I do what I can, my own part from where I stand. And for me, as a family member of sex workers, that means looking at how criminalization and stigma push women into harm's way. Indigenous women are criminalized at every turn, including their means of survival. 25 years ago, we started to see a spike in violence against women in the sex industry, and since then, we've seen 300 women who were trading or selling sex who were murdered. Many, like Cindy, were Indigenous women making a living for themselves and their families. What these women have in common is that they were over-policed and under-protected.
Yes.
Yes.
Many assume that violence is an inevitable part of sex work, think that being an Indigenous woman selling or trading sex is practically asking for it, call it a high-risk lifestyle. This is victim blaming and shifting the responsibility for violence off of us and our governments. There is nothing about being an Indigenous woman or trading or selling sex that is inherently violent, but what we have made so. We have a duty to organize in solidarity. We have a duty to organize in solidarity with Indigenous women in the sex trade to create culturally safe community supports that focus on harm reduction and that do not rely on exiting, because women and men in the sex industry need our support right now. And I want want to say that this is not some pie-in-the-sky thing. We have solutions. We can look to other places that have won safety and respect for people in the sex industry. For example, New Zealand, that removed all laws punishing sex workers in 2003. And we can demand our governments follow suit rather than do what Premier Wynne and the Attorney General, Madame Mayor, up in this building did yesterday, which is to continue to enforce laws that were... They're going to enforce laws that are as bad or worse than the circumstances in which Cindy was, where she was legally barred from working with any safety. She was not allowed to have security. She was not allowed to have anybody she was working with to work with other women. That is illegal. And that is shameful. And that is forcing women into harm's way and abandoning them as they try to survive and support themselves and their families. So I want to say that we know that this colonial government will always have some law. If it wasn't the sex trade laws, it's vagrancy laws, it's anti-drug laws, it's everything. It's not just about sex work, right? It's about the criminalization of entire communities. And while they do have these laws as tools against our families and our communities, we have solidarity, we have creativity, we have defiance, we have real solutions, and we have each other. Thank you.
I wasn't going to say anything here today because I think the drums and the spirit and the organizers and all of your presence here says a lot. But I do want to call in and call for support from all of our Aboriginal agencies, all of our community workers, all of our community members to start unlearning the stigma around our bodies and sexuality right now. It's not okay that young people feel like they don't have the right to do whatever it is that they need to do with their bodies to survive. It is not okay that when somebody discloses that they are trading sex, that they are faced with stigma and no support right here in this city, right here in our agencies. That is not okay. We shouldn't have to be facing this amount of violence and this amount of stigma from our own people, from our own families, who have internalized a lot of stigma and a lot of shame that this is the circumstances that we find ourselves in. So I'm calling in everybody that if that's something that you want to talk about, if you need somebody to process that with, if you need to talk about that, about why trading sex doesn't have to be inherently violent, that I can be that. I'm also on my journey to learning about that and learning how to support young people and the people that I know in my life that are trading sex. And that's something that we all need to learn how to do together. It can't just be up to people in the trade to continue to educate, to continue to call for support, and be met with barriers, and be met with laws. And I'm calling out now, like, the anti-trafficking movement, I am calling out all of the legislation that is demanding that we criminalize ourselves in order to get access to funding for basic supports. It is not okay. And it's actually unsafe to do this. It is actually really scary and unsafe for me to say this as a young Native woman because of the environment that we're in. Of speaking out on this issue is not supported. It's not something that we can talk about openly. So even now I have to say that I'm saying this as an individual, as a community member. I'm not representing anybody. And I have to say that so that we're protected in the work that we can do. And I want to say thank you to everybody who has kind of, I feel like, come out in support and has started posting on Facebook that they support and love people in the sex trade, including young people. And I want to say thank you for that bravery and that courage, and apologize for the feedback. And I want to continue that conversation. I want to continue that conversation so that it's not invisibilized, so that it's not criminalized, so that we can talk about how are we going to support people in our lives right now. So Anishik, thank you for listening and for being here today.
much love and respect to Krista for those words. We're going to end now with a special dance and healing song. So if the jingle dancer could please come forward. Awesome. Fancy shawl. All my relations, Gugach. Thank you.
Filming is okay for this, just to let folks know.
This is a song from Chickadee, from Grassy Narrows. It's called Mother Earth Song, but it's also a woman's healing song.
Thank you so much, everyone, for coming out today. Over 20 cities participated in what effectively became a National Day of Action on Violence Against Indigenous Women. We have to imagine that it was our pressure that led to the appeal of this case. This case would have been forgotten if it wasn't for people like us who are outraged and are demanding more. I want to thank all our speakers today and my co-organizer, Audrey Huntley of No More Silence.
Thank you so much to Chanel, who kicked my ass and got me to do this. Thank you.
I don't know if I got you to do it, but it came out of a kitchen table conversation we had about our grief about this decision. So thank you. Please continue to show your support. Think about ways that you and your community from wherever you are located can be a support to reducing the stigma and criminalization of Indigenous women, including Indigenous women in the sex industry. And we'll stick around for those of us who would like to speak to us. Thank you.
Thank you, all my relations.
For rabble.ca, this is John Bonner. Thank you for listening to John Bonner's audio blog, hosted by rabble.ca and the Rabble Podcast Network.